So, thanks for talking to me. You did not start this book at a point when the border was quite as much in the headlines as it is now, but here we are. Including the Canadian border and its 100-mile border zone, I assume you've been hearing about that. What are your impressions of our moment that we're in now from your perspective?
You know, in researching the book, I think that moment actually began after the September 11th attacks when the security along the border spiked dramatically, 500% increase in agents along the line, military radar, drones, all of that starts to find its way to the northern border. And these days, it's ramping up even more. It's a combination of the current administration's immigration policies, trade tariffs. It's kind of a perfect storm, especially for the northern border that has been so good to commerce between the U.S. and Canada for so long.
Yeah, you know, I've lived in border areas for many years now, and there is a definite... There's a moment. There's that before September 11th, it was like this. After September 11th, it's like this. In terms of people's everyday lives, could you talk a little bit about what some of those differences are for those of us here in the Northeast?
Well, the folks that I met when I was traveling across the border, you know, it was somebody that worked at a restaurant in America and lived in Canada and was sitting in hour-plus waits at ports of entry going both directions, was late to work. The lines can be really hard to gauge. You kind of don't know what's going to happen. It makes it incredibly hard for a person like that. For, you know, up in the North Woods in Maine, you know, you've got lumber being cut on one side of the line, getting milled on the other side of the line, getting shipped and sold back on the original side. There's just a tremendous amount of legal traffic that crosses the northern border on a daily basis. They say around $2 billion in goods and services and 400,000 people cross the line every day legally. And delays at the border, increased aggressive questioning, denials at the border, it all inhibits this kind of these cross-border communities and businesses that have been in the North Country for hundreds of years.
You yourself grew up in Maine in Southwest Harbor near the Canadian border. How did that inform this project?
You know, it was just a fact of life growing up. There were Canadians all along the coastline when I was growing up. And in the summers, we would go up north to a lake 5 miles from the border and hang out up there. And up there, the town was filled with sort of half Canadian, half American. People didn't talk so much about the border back then because it was so porous, it was so easy to go across. You just had a driver's license and you could cross it. You know, it became, you know, people would talk about the difference in the Canadian economy, the Canadian dollar, things like that. Before 2001, half the border crossings on the northern border were not guarded at night. There were border check-ins that were voluntary. It was just, you know, they call it the world's friendliest border, and for many years it was. And now all of a sudden it's sort of getting militarized and hardening quite a bit.
Just before I came in to do this interview, I was looking at the main part of your journey, and I had sort of two impressions that I'm hoping that you'll talk about. The first is that you seem to accidentally cross into Canada quite a lot. And the second is that you seem to be quite nervous a lot of the time about the Border Patrol.
Yeah, the nervousness came mostly from reading in the news about people who had been detained and arrested, and many of them accidentally crossing the line as well. I spoke with the former commissioner at the international, the group that keeps an eye on the St. Croix. It's half Canadian, half American. And the former director there said, well, you know, we've got a lot of fishermen that are getting arrested. They fish the St. Croix their entire lives, and suddenly, you know, they're pulling over at their favorite camp spot or picnic spot, and out comes a Border Patrol officer from the States or from Canada and says, this is illegal, we're giving you a ticket, or we're detaining you, or whatever that might be. So that's where the nervousness came from, and it quickly went away after a few days on the St. Croix and then up on Spednik and East Grand Lake and North Lake. When I sort of realized that there wasn't a whole lot of people watching that part of the line, or certainly not any that I saw, I guess I'm a terrible navigator, but up north in a lot of places, there's no cell phone signal. There's no way to use the GPS on your phone. It was very hard to tell what side of the line I was on the river, on the lakes. And in fact, the line actually shifts with the deep water mark in the river and in the lakes. As the deep water mark moves officially, that is the border between the U.S. and Canada, then officially the line moves as well. It's unmarked, almost entirely unmarked through those regions. It's very easy to just kind of slip across.
And although you may not have known where you were, there was definitely impressions among the people that you met that the Border Patrol did know where you were at all times.
Yeah, there were. There were some characters that in the book that I interviewed that were sure that Border Patrol kind of tracks everybody in the North Country. And there were just as many that, realized the impossibility of that. And, said, well, it's really up to this kind of these small towns in northern Maine to keep an eye on their backyards, the roads, report any strangers that are walking through town. And they do that regularly. And it's, it's kind of on them that America, they kind of depend on them for security in certain situations because as far as I could tell, there wasn't really anyone that was watching every inch of that line.
And you had an experience of being recognized and, identified as being the person who was not local.
Yeah, I was in Forest City. That was an interesting moment. I put my canoe up at the Forest City boat landing and was walking into town. And I had all of my camping gear with me. I'm a writer. I had my laptop and a waterproof case. Even to me, I looked somewhat suspicious walking through town and or walking down the main road. And I was kind of surprised. I was like, wow, this is actually quite easy to just kind of walk into town like this after being in Canada for most of the day. And then an older woman pulled up behind me in a quad ATV and repeatedly asked me where I was from and where I'd put in my canoe and where I was headed and da-da-da-da. Really no answer that I gave her would satisfy her, so I kept going, and she then called just about everybody in town to report her findings.
You say in your introduction, much of the northern border is very beautiful, but it's not quaint. Areas along the border have the same kinds of problems as any other poor areas, as well as in some parts of the border, border-specific problems like human trafficking and drug trafficking. Is that something you really wanted to get across here?
I did. I didn't want to harp on it, but, when we talk about Maine, we talk about beauty and serenity and these great, massive, roadless areas of wilderness, and that's the Maine that I grew up in and that I truly love, but and it's also the Maine that tourists come to see, and which makes the state a lot of money in the warm months anyway. But there's also a lot of problems in the state, and many of those are in those northern towns and unorganized territories and whatnot, where the opioid crisis is terrible, where poverty is widespread, You know, it's so different up there when you drive from a place like Kennebunkport or Bar Harbor or Portland, and you know, you kind of get up into the reaches of Washington County. It's a whole different world.
What do you take away from the part of your journey where you were in your home state? Did you learn something new, or was there one sort of dominant impression?
You know, it was one of my favorite parts of the trip because, and I wanted to start there. I wanted to start there because the border started there. It started on the St. Croix, on St. Croix Island, 1604, when Samuel de Champlain creates the first colony of New France there. And years later, they use that island as a marker to begin this border between the United States of America and British Canada. So as I moved from east to west, I wanted to chronologically follow the development of the border. And so Maine fit the bill perfectly for that. But having grown up in the North Country and spending so much time there, I feel very comfortable there. I feel very comfortable talking to the people there, knowing kind of what questions to ask and when, and when you're pushing too far. And it was a great place to kind of dip my feet into the water of this book. And you know, I learned so much about not just border security there, but about the history of this part of North America and what was there before the border, and what kind of natural ecological borders were there that led to the creation of this border, or perhaps why they drew the border where it did. You know, being able to talk with the Passamaquoddy tribe up around Eastport was really started a whole thread of the book about Native American communities that have been split in half by the border and face a tremendous number of problems because of that. So a lot of that started in Maine, and I got to carry it out as I crossed the country.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention?
You know, a big takeaway from the project for me was really to try to reveal some of these corners of America that folks don't often go to. Like I said, people come to Maine, they go to Bar Harbor, they go to Portland, they really hit the coast, maybe Sebago Lake. But, you know, it's just so interesting, and there's so much to learn by going into some of the forgotten corners of our state as well, going up into Washington County and kind of exploring into the North Woods that, you know, there are those of us and even groups, you know, that have protected this land for many, many years. And yet when I was traveling through it, there was nobody up there. So it's a really intriguing and incredible part of the country. And I hope more people get to go see it.
Well, Porter Fox is the author of Northland. Thank you so much.
Thank you.